You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Top Order podcast. Lots to cover on tonight's show, as always. India level the series, but England proving a very difficult opponent. We'll talk a little bit of Jasprit Bumrah, some Jaiswal as well, some contrasting success for the two spin attacks, and potential changes for the third test, golfing injuries in Abu Dhabi, notwithstanding. We'll also talk a little bit of New Zealand, South Africa. Kane, the GOAT, goes back to back. We've got Ravindra, we've got Santnat, we've got a balance of the New Zealand attack, and any changes for that second test. Looks like there'll be one enforced change. Daryl Mitchell injured going into that second test match, and much, much more. All coming up on the Top Order podcast. Stay tuned. Well, boys, another week of test cricket. Really keen to delve into both games of cricket. Particularly, I've got some questions for you, Lip, about that New Zealand.
Oh, good. We're going to talk about New Zealand.
South Africa series. But I think, you know, even you have done the running order, and you know that we've got to start with England, India. A levelling of the series, probably not in quite the way that was expected. You know, we felt there might be a bit more in that pitch, but we'll come on to talk about that. But I guess first impressions from the neutrals, first and foremost, from this game in Vishakhapatnam, or Vizag, as it's been shortened to.
I know. Don't quite know how they get that, but that's fair enough.
Well, easier to say, isn't it, I guess. What do we think about the test match?
It's been an enthralling series so far, hasn't it? It's been two high-quality games of cricket. There's been some big innings, one from Ollie Pope, and now Jaswal's got himself a double hundred. So, you know, big innings in there, probably flying a little bit in the face of, I think, how a lot of people would have conceived of the series maybe being a bit more low scoring. But it's good to see batters who can get in and get themselves set, getting big scores. But there's lots of starts in both innings. If you ever look at the scores, you know, the lowest score is what, 253 of the four innings. So there's lots of runs on offer for the teams that can get them in and get themselves going.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would like to pick up on that, because I know that we've sort of talked about pitches, and can I just say it's fantastic that we're not like sitting here debating, like we're obviously talking about pitches now, but we're not going to be sitting here going, oh, that's a terrible pitch, or that was really unfair. I think we've seen two pitches that have been absolutely excellent for quality cricket, and I think you and I, Binksy, certainly on the Slack channel, and I don't know how much we mentioned it, at least in our preview, but we kind of thought, okay, if they're going to prepare pitches that are not a lottery, they're pitches that if you bowl good spin, you get rewarded, that's going to favour India, right? Like, India won't lose on surfaces where it's a level playing field in that sense, because their spin attack is so much better. So I don't understand, why has that not happened? I know India obviously won this test, you know, but England is making it very, very difficult for them, and obviously they won that first test.
Yeah, well, anytime a guy gets 196, you're a chance of winning a test match, right? And I think all other things being roughly equal, the obvious answer is that, you know, in the first test, an England guy got 196, and in the second test, an Indian guy got 209, and those are the, you know, causal factors. But it's actually a lot more nuanced than that, right? There's a lot more to unpack.
Yeah, look, I guess there's been a stat doing the rounds on Twitter, and, well, not just on Twitter, it was actually in the game, so it was a legitimate statistic around the England spinners operating at pretty close to an average of 30 for the wickets that they took across the test match, and comparison to the Indian spinners probably closer to 40. I think obviously the key, or one of the keys, I think, was Ravi Jadeja's been sensational for India over a pretty decent period of time. Mm. Me and Bordy were just talking actually about Axar and his stats. You know, has started really, really well. We've probably got to see him play away to judge how good a spinner he is. Yeah. But apart from that, you know, what was a crucial wicket by Kuldeep Yadav in the second innings, and we may go on to talk about that LBW decision. He didn't have a massive amount of impact. He got three for in the first innings, but I think England have played the spin pretty well, which isn't, you know, what you would expect from an England side. But when you now look down that batting order, Joe Root's always probably been a pretty good player of spin. Ollie Pope, I think, has found a method. Bairstow, I think, with his white ball success is, you know, and particularly now with DRS, if you look at the way he sets up, he doesn't want to get that pad anywhere in the way of the ball. He wants to hit everything through the offside. And then we've talked quite a lot about Ben Duckett, who was known back in his early 20s as a really, really good player of spin. Mm. And then, Zach Crawley has used his levers and his, his length of stride really, really, really well. So I think they've just had a really, really good game plan. And have combated exactly what India would have wanted to do, which was, you know, get the ball into the surface. And look, you've arguably got to say that I'm really interested in your thoughts on Shoaib Bashir. We've had a little bit of a recent history of England spinners doing pretty well on debut. He's probably not quite got the 5-for that Ryan Ahmed did, or the 7-for that Tom Hartley did, or even the 5-for that Will Jacks got in his first game. But he looked mighty impressive for a debutant off spinner, and certainly rivaled probably the accuracy that you'd come to expect really from an Axar and a Ravi Jadeja.
Absolutely. And I mean, to before I answer that question, I think the point about England, the way England's batters have combated the Indian spinners, has been so, so impressive. And in all the other conversations that are going on, I don't know that that's kind of got enough credit, because the fact that, we thought Ashwin was going to dominate this series. We thought, Jadeja obviously missed that second test, but, you know, basically that was in most people's minds the key to this series, that these spinners, you know, nobody was going to be able to come here and baz-ball their way to a victory because these spinners were so dominant.
And it still might be. We've got three games to go. And I think we've got to talk, Bordy, about Yashasvi Jaiswal.
Do you want to talk about Bashir?
Can I talk a bit about Bashir?
Because I do think that, what stood out to me actually about him was mainly just that he did not look overawed in any way by the moment. I think if you look at Tom Hartley's debut, that first first spell that he bowled, I know he obviously came back and things have, like, he's bounced back in an enormous way, and we might talk about him more in later on in this podcast. But I think that the Bashir just, he looked really comfortable. And, you know, for someone who's played, what was it, 6 first-class games, 10 wickets or something before that, you know, improved his first-class average by bowling in this test match. Like, I thought that was very, very impressive. And I think in many ways it kind of just stands for everything that baz-ball is supposed to be. It makes that, when I think about what the baz-ball kind of environment is supposedly doing, it seems like it just makes people feel 10 feet tall when they're standing at the top of the crease with the ball in their hand or with the bat. It feels like it doesn't matter if you fail. Like, we trust you and just go out there and perform. And it makes people feel like, okay, that's fine. I'll just run in and do my job. I'll run in and try things and do whatever. And I mean, he didn't have a whirlwind game. Like, people aren't going to look back at this and go, like
4 for 200.
But I think he looked comfortable enough at that level. And that's sort of, in my opinion, kind of all you want. And I think, I think he did a good job.
Bordy, bit of leg spin in there as well with Ryan Ahmed. I've got a question here for both of you. And he came in as the Nighthawk as well. Will he be a better batter or better bowler? And the answer can't be yes.
Oh, damn it. That was going to be what I... Because you'd always do that. Will he be this or that? Yes. I think he will be a better bowler than he will bat. But he's going to be... Like, he's going to grow into his role in Test cricket. He's flown under the radar in this series. Not many people are talking about Rayan Ahmed's contribution, but he's got 8 wickets in this series, averaging 36, striking at under 60. In fact, he's under 55 in terms of his strike rate. So that's good for a leggy. And in India, where conditions typically favour finger spin a little bit more just in terms of the surface and how quick the surface is, I think he's done really well.
Yeah. I think he'll be... I'm really impressed with him. I actually think, of the three, I think he'll be the best spinner out of all, you know, out of all of those young guys. I mean, you know, who knows? It's very early to tell in all of their careers. But I just think he's kind of got something. And yeah, I've been very, very impressed with the way he's gone about things. I think the interesting part is sort of the way that Stokes has used all three spinners has been really fascinating to me, because Rayan didn't even bowl till like after tea.
Yeah.
Joe Root opened the bowling.
60 odd overs into the, yeah.
In the first innings, yeah. Then like second innings.
Leggies can't bowl with a new ball though.
No.
Well, you can't bowl a leggy with a new ball. That would be sacrilege.
But for, you know, second innings, almost completely reversed. Mm. Like Root hardly bowled, Rayan Ahmed and Tom Hartley bowled most of the overs, whereas, yeah, first innings, Bashir bowled 38 overs.
Root was off the field for a lot of that second innings. Whilst we're talking about the England bowling, and we are going to come on to India, I promise you, particularly Indian fans, a word on Jimmy Anderson's performance in this test match. Look, I'm super biased, but... Yeah, look, a couple of the wickets that he took, that bowled off stump delivery, was absolutely sensational. A couple of nick offs as well, you know, got everything he could out of that pitch.
I mean, I feel like I've been asking you for the last couple of years, you know, is this Jimmy's last series? Is this Jimmy's last year? But he looked pretty good in that game, and I think from that performance, he's going to play. Like, I would pick him now for every test that, you know, fitness and all of that kind of stuff, load management, all of that. You would pick him as your frontline spinner now, or frontline seamer.
He's still just quick enough.
Yeah, just quick enough. But you'd pick him as your frontline seamer if you're going to keep going with this balance of the attack. I think he's your one because of that craft and the way that he's able to sum up the conditions. And I think what he also offers, which maybe Mark Wood didn't offer, is that just he's able to be kind of what a spinner is able to do sometimes in other conditions. He can hold, he can be the holding bowler where goes at two and over.
Yeah, economy 2.17 in this test match across is 35 overs?
And 1.8 in the first innings, which I thought was a typo. I really did.
Yeah. Superb. Just on Rayan Ahmed versus the other spinners, I really like Tom Hartley. I know it's an easy thing to say, but he's made runs with the bat and he's got, 14 wickets now? He's tall. Like, he's got an action, I think, that can survive and thrive in lots of different conditions, particularly when it's offering bounce. So have hope at him.
Keeps looking at me because...
Have hope at him.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Liffy's going to admit it or whether I need to post the messages from our Slack channel on public social media.
Look, I'd written him off after that first inning, so I will completely admit to that. I thought, I just said Bashir didn't look overawed at all. I thought Hartley looked, the moment didn't look like he could manage the moment, in the sense that he was just not consistent enough. Like, I get that he was, like, he seemed comfortable and fine there.
And that was,
but he wasn't able to land his deliveries, and he was bowling them all over the place. He was bowling too many loose balls. And I think particularly as a finger spinner, you need to be consistent.
Mm.
But I think, you know, obviously he got 7 for in the next innings, and, you know, it was a match-winning performance. I actually think the more impressive part is that he came back in this test and I think bowled better. Was didn't get quite the results.
He's bowled in 4 innings, and I think he's improved in each innings that he's bowled in.
Yes.
On the whole.
Yeah, and I think that's the more impactful, thing that he can probably take away and go, okay, well, like, I'm actually getting better and more comfortable at this level and figuring things out, and he was able to bowl with more control and able to bowl at a better economy rate and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, I think that bodes well. Look, whether he, you and I were talking about whether he should be the frontline spinner for England going forward, whether, I don't think you just discard Jack Leach. I think he's been, a handy cricketer for them for a long time. And, Yeah, but we shall see.
I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying about Jack Leach and what you said on the Slack channel about Jack Leach. I think what I, you know, my view on seeing a little bit of him, you mentioned, you know, Bashir didn't look overawed. I didn't think that Tom Hartley looked overawed, even in that first innings where he was getting a bit of tap in that first test match. Mm. His body language, I thought, was really, really good. His body language, certainly when he came out to bat, was really, really good. I think if you kind of look at his figures in that first game as well, I can't remember exactly what they were, but his first nine overs, I think, went for 60-odd. He then bowled 16 overs and went for about the same off those 16 overs. So when you kind of put that into isolation, 16 overs, 2 for 60.
Yeah.
He bowled with a new ball. You know, he wouldn't have done that a hell of a lot, even for Lancashire, because he hasn't played a lot of red ball cricket. So I think his ceiling could be a little bit like an Ashley Giles type player, a guy that you can play home and away.
Yep.
And I think, you know, there's some parallels again with, you know, with Ajaz to a certain extent. England are probably only going to play one spinner at home,
yeah,
in pretty much all conditions, apart from maybe Old Trafford on occasions. Mm. So they need to find someone. And I think particularly if they want to go down the route in the very near future of getting folks into the side, who we might talk about a little bit later on, then they probably need a spinning option that can offer a little bit with the bat. Or they need a top order player like a Stokes to offer a little bit of the ball if they're going to get that balance. So that's why I'm really excited about him. It's very early in his career,
yeah,
but I think he just looks the part as a Test cricketer. Has taken a couple of, you know, catches in the series as well and a run out. So
here is very entertaining for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Bordy, let's talk about Jaiswal. And I guess I want to probably just preface this by saying, it was double or nothing for India in that first innings, wasn't it? A double 100 and then
34, I think, was the
literally nothing else. Yeah. And I think if we look at this game, if England had got, you know, 50 more runs in that first innings, all of a sudden, probably when they got to the stage that they got in that fourth innings, you know, 50 to win instead of 100 to win would have made a pretty, you know, bit of squeaky bum. Do India have some worries from a batting perspective? It looks as if KL Rahul's going to come back in for the next game, but we're hearing that Virat Kohli's out for the next two test matches.
Yeah.
So he won't be back until at least the fifth test. But yeah, I mean, first let's talk about Jaiswal. Fantastic innings. But then, any worries for India from a batting perspective?
What do you think, Paulie? I mean, yeah, I'm often the one, going a bit doolally anytime Jaiswal does anything. I'm very happy to admit that I love watching him play. I think the way he's a guy who you can see that his natural instinct is to score all the time, isn't it? And the way he attacked those spinners, it's obviously been like part of England or India's plan to attack those spinners, not let those English spinners settle, go after them. And the way he's able to get down, use his feet, like some of the shots he was playing over cover and stuff, beautiful, beautiful stuff. But I think that, again, what impressed me the most about this innings is that, like you just said, wickets were falling all the time, and I think he had to show a lot of maturity to actually continue on and make sure that India got to 400, because they needed all of those runs in the end. And I think, you know, the way he was able to not get to 100 and go, oh cool, now I can start smashing it all over the place, he was able to kind of dig in against Anderson when Anderson made him work hard. Yeah, I think it showed a lot of positives for his development and long-term kind of career to push on and make that 100 a big double 100.
I think this is a little bit an answer to your question, Stu, why have these test matches been so competitive? Normally in the past, and we kind of saw it a little bit in the first test, multiple Indian players having got a start get 60, 70, 80. We saw that in the first test where India went big in that innings. In the second test, you have a look, even though they got 396, and you pointed it out, Adam, no one really got past 34, and that was Shubman Gill. He's the guy who's probably under the most scrutiny in that batting lineup from a long-term, you know, what's his position look like when everyone's fit, healthy, and available kind of point of view. So there is a lot to examine in terms of that Indian batting. I think you've got a couple of guys in there that are filling some pretty big boots. Patidar and others are filling some pretty big, you know, Kohli, Rahul-sized boots. We haven't seen, in the absence of those two guys, Rohit Sharma step up and make a lot of runs in this series. So they're, India are allowing, not allowing, but India, through their lack of big scores, multiple batters getting big scores, allowing England into the game a little bit, and England are taking full advantage of that. So, you know, traditionally what we've seen from India is, you know, they get 500 for three, you know, Lakshman gets 200, Rahul gets 100, Tendulkar gets 270. We're not seeing that at the moment, okay? Mostly because those guys have been retired for 15 or 16 years, but you're not seeing that kind of big contributions, multiple guys going big for India at the moment.
I think it's a good point. You almost sort of slipped it out by accident, but I think India have gifted England a lot of wickets in this test or in this series so far. And, you know, you could put that down to the way that England's bowled and kind of attacked them at different times. But I think India, if they just look at each dismissal of the, you know, throughout this series so far, I think they'll be disappointed with the way that the dismissals at least are happening. You're frowning?
I think that probably, to be honest, doesn't give enough credit to the way that Stokes has probably captained and the way that the guys have looked to attack throughout the course of the series. I'm not going to disagree. You know, even if we look at the way Jaiswal got out, all right, it was late. You know, he was having a little bit of a swing at that particular point. A couple of guys, you know, holding out in the deep, but I thought that England set their field really well. They knew when deep mid wicket or deep square leg or deep cover was a catcher. It was a relatively small ground, and it was a relatively, if it's past you, it's full ground as well. So I think you take a little bit away from the way that England have probably set some of their plans and been, you know, attacking with the ball. And then look, I think again, England have caught pretty well in this series so far, and that hasn't been something you can say about them. Certainly if we go back pre-Bazball and even elements of Bazball, you know, they spilled a few against Australia. Yep. But yeah, again, the catching, superb, not least from my man Folks. He took, yeah, two blinders the inside edges.
You had to have a lie down after the after the under edge catch, didn't you? It was a superb piece of wicket keeping.
Look, inside edge, or bottom edge, 6'2", stayed down in the, like, mate, yeah, that's like Lippy going through the gate or a leg side stumping for me. I think he's been exemplary with the with the gloves, and I think Ryan Almond called it out in some post match, just said, you know, he's a freak and he trains so hard for all of that.
Watching some of the videos that you see of the social clips of him training is really fun. Yeah. I will say that, even as someone who, you know, probably doesn't appreciate the art of wicket keeping as much as you do.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about Jasprit Bumrah. Me and Baldy, before you turned up, Stu, have had a little look at the stats. I heard this somewhere, but there's only, other than SF Barnes, there's no one with more than 150 test wickets at a better average and strike rate than Jasprit Bumrah.
Wow.
His strike rate, I can't remember. I did write
low 40s.
Low 40s. But yeah, in terms of his average, just a tick over 20. And look, we can talk about how good he was in this test match, but he's an awkward customer, isn't he? An odd, you know, little stuttering run-up that kind of, I think, would annoy the hell out of you as a batter to try and pick. And if he was coming in one of those, you know, bat fast games, you'd be sort of saying, hold on, the Wi-Fi's down. He's stopped. And then all of a sudden you're off stumps out the ground, not least that delivery to Ollie Pope. And then also the way he sort of, I don't know whether it hyperextends is the right phrase, but he delivers the ball from almost a couple of feet, maybe even a metre in front of the popping crease. So he's already a yard quicker.
Exactly.
But yeah, just freak.
Look, physically he's unlike a lot of biomechanically trained fast bowlers that have emerged over the last 15 or 20 years. He has a reasonably unique run up. Although, having said that, I was down watching some junior cricket training yesterday, and two guys in the nets here in New Zealand were doing that exact action. Brilliant. In the nets. So it's apparently copyable.
Are they playing for us on Saturday?
Not playing for us on Saturday, sadly, but they were in the under 11. So in a couple of years' time.
Yeah,
a couple of years' time, they'll be there. But his seam position is immaculate. It seems like It doesn't look like it on the surface of it, but it's a beautifully repeatable action. It's very simple. The biomechanics of his run are really sound, even though it doesn't look like it. It, you know, just in terms of where his hips and his shoulders are and all the rest of it, he avoids injury. But he's just such a great bowler to watch because he's just got the skills to execute, right. You know, Yorkers and have the stumps clattering. I got a text from some mates in Australia. I think there was one of the ones where he's kind of bowled one of the England players' neck and crop and the stumps flying everywhere. And that just came through and it says, has anyone ever been more bold in the history of Test cricket than that?
Oh, that's going to have been Pope.
I think that might have been the Pope dismissal. And I had to sort of keep quiet because, you know, I didn't want to, you know, jinx anything or get the cricket karma gods going against me. But yeah, he is superb. Jasper Bumrah.
It's hard to believe we got this far in the podcast with not talking about him because, you know, we just talked about the way England's gone about things. We talked about the Jaiswal, a guy who scored double 100. Mm. Jasper Bumrah is the player of the match and I think absolutely deserved that because he was... Like, he's just so, you know, for all the reasons that you've just talked about, he's so spectacular. But what I think what's even more impressive is he had a long time out of the game. And I think he's come back as an even better bowler. I think I talked about it in the World Cup. I banged on about it. I've just been so impressed with the way that he's come back. And he seems to have more skills than he had before. Like, he's able to, you know, he's a perfect exponent of all the movement that they were able to extract in the air in this game. You know, he was just fantastic. The Yorkers, it felt like every time... he just really embraced being a strike bowler, I think, in this game as well. Yep. Whereas I don't think none of us expected, you know, we all talked about him as an important bowler. I don't think we thought he would be the most important bowler in this series. And basically every single time that England started to put the pressure on, Rohit Sharma went, please get us a wicket now, Jasper. Like, we need a wicket. And it felt like he said, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I will get you a wicket. And he just delivered.
And that's what's amazing about that guy, right? We talk about like great fast bowlers and they're the guys that you turn to when your side's in trouble and you need a wicket. It seems like every time, as you say, he stood up for his captain and delivered the goods.
Well, and a really important wicket of Joe Root in that. And he's got him on toast. I think he's 8 dismissals or something like that. But again, I just think this is a nod as well to the quality of the surface that we're talking about, a game where Mukesh was pretty much like anonymous in the test match, wasn't he? I think he maybe bowled 10 or 12 overs maybe. But the two other the two other seamers that we're talking about, Jasprit Bumrah and Jimmy Anderson, who, you know, will go down as two of the, you know, the best fast bowlers around, took what, 14 or 15 wickets out of 40 when you're expecting it's going to be take the shine off and watch the spinners bowl all day. Should we move on and talk about third test match? So England are off in Abu Dhabi.
Not quite the hoopla about them going off there as there was last time that they went to the Emirates, was there?
I do. Yeah, look, it's amazing how there's been a little bit of humble pie eaten about their preparations after the first two test matches here. Look, I'm sure the knives might come out again because my understanding is at the airport there was a trolley with golf clubs on that was going to Abu Dhabi and there was a trolley with cricket gear on that was going off to Rajkot. And
Dan Lawrence took his cricket kit, though, I understand. I think he's going to play some T20 in the IL T20 while he's over there.
Oh, right. Well, he may...
He's got to get a bat, doesn't he?
May as well, in between driving range and golf courses. But England offer a bit of R&R. Looks as if it's unlikely that Harry Brook will return. So apparently no contact with him. They're just, you know, letting him... obviously deal with the family matter and circumstances that have come up. Jack Leach, also a pretty big doubt, I think, to continue on the tour. He was ill.
Continue on the tour even?
Yeah, so I think that might be the call, that he's still, you know, really, really struggling with that. But I guess 7 days, R&R, you don't know what's going to happen there. A bit of illness in the camp, but hopefully they'll have sorted that out. I think Ben Folkes, Joe Root, and I think one other, Ollie Pope or something like that, were feeling ill on that final final morning, so they've got the stomach bug, but that'll probably be gone. But probably more news from the India camp. Virat's going to be missing for another couple of test matches, and then Rahul and Jadeja back in. So is that a pretty simple swap, that Pattadar goes out and maybe Kuldeep goes out and Ravi Jadeja comes back in? They're going to have to change a seamer as well, aren't they, Mukesh, I think?
Yeah, well, Siraj's, I think, was being rotated out, had a bit of a niggle and was rotated out. So he sounds like he will be back as well. So yeah, I think that the...
And we've heard, is Shami back or not?
Because he was... I haven't seen any news about Shami. Yeah. I think he would be fantastic on these surfaces. I think he's definitely a miss. But yeah, I haven't seen anything about him. The word sounds like it's Siraj in for Mukesh. You guys don't seem like you are that big on Kuldeep. I would pick him ahead of Akshar. I know that he offers way less with the bat, obviously. But I think that if you're bringing Jadeja back, you've got Akshar, essentially. I know they are different bowlers, that the height for Akshar is different. But yeah, I just think Kuldeep's a better bowler. And
in this series so far, has the evidence of seeing Akshar in this series and Kuldeep in this series convinced you of that still?
I think so, yeah. I think he's more likely to take
wickets. Because the stats don't tell you that story.
I think he's more likely... Akshar's stats aren't good, are they?
They're not great, but neither are Kuldeep's.
Well,
are we talking about batting stats?
No, bowling stats.
In this series.
In this series.
Oh, right, I was going to say. His career stats are pretty good.
Yeah, no, they're great.
Yeah, I just think that against this attack, I think he's more... this batting attack from England, I think he's a more dangerous proposition. You know, I agree with you guys that they'll probably just go with Akshar and Jadeja. Kuldeep will miss out. I think, yeah, Pattadar is probably the one that misses out.
For Rahul.
For KL Rahul. And you know, Shubman Gill and Iyer were probably the ones that were, as you guys touched on before, were really playing for their spots. And I think, you know, particularly, I mean, Shubman Gill, we didn't mention that he did get 100 and like
in the second innings. Yeah,
yeah. Look,
and got a crucial innings.
Got 100 crucial innings. I think had a little bit of rub of the green, and yep. That isn't. So Indian fans, I'm sure you're going to be all over the Twitter comments, but you know, I think we've not probably talked about it, and I don't think it impacted the game massively. But Chris Gaffney had a poor game, with his decisions, and I think there was an LB that was an umpire's call that went with Gill, and there was a very similar one that went
Crawley.
Went the other way, and then even he didn't know he'd got a little tickle on that one, so. The really, really fine margins.
And inside edges. And
paid off for him. Really good 100.
And he needed that. And even after that, like I couldn't believe it, because you sort of think about him as, you know, the wonder kid, don't you? Like the way he's kind of talked about and even like a year, let's say, you know, wind it back 12 months, that's sort of what I thought, that here we go, here's Shubman Gill, he's going to be everything that they're promising, because he's just scoring hundreds for fun, certainly in the white ball formats. But you look at his test record, he's played 22 tests now and he averages 31, even after that 100, which is a pretty modest return in this sort of day and age.
It is, but I wonder if he's better off opening the batting. And I know he's got to get past Rohit and Jaswal and a bunch of, you know, potentially a bunch of others in there waiting in the wings as well to open the batting for India. The spot's at 3, he's taken it. I think it's one of those ones where you kind of just have to trust that he is going to come off for you and he's going to keep improving. Yeah.
I think he will be a mainstay of that order. I think he's got the technique and he's got the temperament for Test cricket, and I think you give him a decent run. I don't think they'll go Kuldeep. I've got to say, I think bringing him into the side really does affect the balance, because they've got that opportunity where Aksar, Jadeja and Ashwin can all probably bat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, we know Jadeja can definitely bat 5.
Aksar batted 6 in this game, didn't he?
Ashwin can probably bat 6.5, and Aksar similar. They'd probably then need to make a call that maybe Rahul comes back in, keeps wicket, and Bharat goes out, although Barrett's had a, you know, really decent series with the gloves. Definitely not the best keeper on show in the series, but you know, he's done well with the gloves, and I think will be needed if they're going to pick three spinners. So I think it's really difficult, and Kuldeep would be a bit of a luxury, I think, whereas I think England are quite comfortable that Rahul Arbin's that luxury, because they've got Root as well, a top order guy who can bowl a few overs.
So England, no changes?
it'd be interesting to see what they do if there is any more seam on option. I think given the fact that they've got a pretty decent rest period, I think if the pitch and conditions look anything similar to what we've seen so far, as long as all the guys pull up the same, I don't see any reason. We've got probably a little bit of a doubt around Joe Root, hurt his finger. Yeah. We don't know how bad that was. Don't know whether that frenetic second innings knock was to do with the fact he couldn't hold the bat, or to do with the fact that, he took a sugared Red Bull instead of a no sugar one just before he went into bat. So that probably be the only concern from now. But yeah, who knows if they, you know, slip on a tee box or whatever over the course of the next week or so. Let's move on. Let's talk some test cricket on these fair shores. So look, convincing victory. Can I get a controversial statement out of the way first? Ask Bordy when Bordy rocked up, is this in the World Test Championships? And the answer was yes. Do you feel at all kind of robbed in a way that these are pretty, and I don't mean this in a nasty way about New Zealand, but these are pretty cheap points for New Zealand against what is a third 11 South African side?
Deep thought.
I'm trying to phrase this carefully.
I don't think you need to phrase it carefully. I think much has been said about the way that South Africa has picked this test side.
I feel for the players in this South African side, because they chose to represent their country. They put their country first. They stuck their hand up to represent the Rainbow Nation, and they should be very proud of having done so. But it's not the first choice bowling attack for South Africa. It's not the first choice batting attack for South Africa. They have been soundly beaten in both of these test matches.
Well,
against New Zealand so far.
Well, one test match so far. Hopefully it'll make it two and New Zealand will win the series. But
didn't they get smashed in the warm-up game too?
No. Can you carry on?
Fair enough.
But Bordy's got a prediction for the second test.
Sorry.
But carry on with your train of thought, Bordy, even if you're a test match ahead of yourself.
Yes, they are. There is an asterisk against this test series for me, because it's quite clearly not just they're missing a couple of players. It's not like we're warming up for the World Cup and we've got three or four guys like Australia have against the West Indies, new players in their one-day setup. It's a completely different team, a completely different bowling attack. So without any disrespect to Neil Brand or any of the players that are in that South African side at the moment, they are not the first choice. And it does feel, having watched this first test match, sorry, I'm ahead of myself, just this first test match at least, that... Yeah, New Zealand have been given a bit of a gift, and you can't look a gift in the mouth. You've got to take it.
Yeah, and this is absolutely nothing against the Black Caps. Let's talk about their performance, because there's some individual performances in that test match that are pretty special. But I do feel pretty strongly that there needs to be some legislation, I think, from the ICC around this. And to Bordy's point, I think he's been overly kind that these guys have chosen to represent South Africa. These guys have not got an SA T20 contract.
David Beddingham's the only exception, and
one of the other batters chose not to play in that tournament. I think for the majority of the rest of them, they probably wouldn't have been picked up in that SA T20 anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, New Zealand's performances in the game, I guess, let's start with Raj's man, Ratchin.
Well, I think just to kind of cover off what you guys have said, I'm not going to argue with you that, yeah, this is not a South African side. I think from New Zealand's point of view, they're on a hiding to nothing. Like, basically, the whole world is watching this.
Yeah.
And all they are watching to see is, like, does New Zealand falter against the South African side? Because they comfortably beat them and there'll be nothing. Like, there'll be... Nobody. That's what everyone is expecting.
Yep. So no one in New Zealand is talking up this test match, right?
No. People, you see comments online like, this is a farce. This is, and look, it's not quite a farce, but certainly, you look at that bowling attack, it's not been a bowling attack that, it's not a bowling attack that any test lineup will be worried about when they go in to face them. So I think that the way New Zealand went about this and actually did everything, you know, I said they were on a hiding to nothing. They came out and delivered a hiding of their own, you know, like
absolutely.
They did exactly what they needed to do. And I think in the way that they maybe have gone about this series, we'll see what happens in the second test in terms of how they pick their side. I think that they might be using it in a really positive way. We saw Rachin Ravindra, as you said, has been picked at, you know, he's been picked to come in at number four, and he came in at four. They were actually in a, you know, they're in a bit of trouble. 39 for two. He comes in and him and Kane have to rebuild. But once, you know, they actually had a few shaky moments at the start. Moriki was going past the outside edge. Peterson was going past the outside edge. Moriki, you know,
his first spell was good.
Yeah.
His first spell in Test cricket was really good.
Yeah. But, you know, they were able to build that partnership, get through that tough moment, and basically from then on it was just a procession for New Zealand.
Yeah. What do you think the Black Caps have learnt from this game, if anything, to prepare them for, I guess, Australia hitting their shores, which, again, I've kind of written down, like, we talked a hell of a lot when you had your Boxing Day test match a couple of years ago, that was the opportunity. Forget that. This now, I've got to be honest, the fact that it's two test matches really winds me up, but let's not go into that. But, you know, forget that MCG game. This is a real opportunity, I think, where you've been pretty good at home for a long, long time. Know exactly how to play in these conditions, and I think you fancy being competitive against Australia. But what can you learn from this, or is this, you know, just a bit of a tune-up?
Well, I think it's a tune-up in that sense that you're hoping to get everyone in form. But as I said before, like, putting Rachin in at four, that's huge. You know, he goes in now. Like, I've seen so many comments. I was talking to Raj before this podcast. You know, he said the most frustrating thing was you see him, Rachin, score 100, and it wasn't like, hey, this is a great moment for this young kid. There was all these articles that came out and all these think pieces about, oh, ridiculous that New Zealand should have been picking this guy for the last 2 years, instead of actually focusing on the fact that, you know, whether by good management or by a bit of good luck, I think that the way that Rachin Ravindra's past 12 months have gone have been about exactly perfect. You know, he hasn't played every single game for New Zealand, but he's been, for 2 years now, been introduced into the New Zealand international environment. You know, brought in really young, brought in, you know, probably before he had deserved it from a first class level, but the talent was clearly there. He's gone in and played bit part roles in all sorts of different environments, in white ball cricket and in test cricket. He's been an opener, he's been a closer, he's been someone who, you know, comes in test cricket and bats seven as a spin bowling all rounder, even though batting is probably still his strongest point. Now they've gone, he has these moments at the World Cup where, again, good luck or good management, that the kind of cards fell, the Michael Bracewell and the, you know, Kane Williamson injuries meant that there was an opportunity for someone at the top of the order. They gave Rachin that opportunity. He goes out, scores hundreds against three brilliant attacks, you know, is feeling on top of the world, gets an IPL contract that now he'll be with MS Dhoni, he'll be with Stephen Fleming. He doesn't play the test series in Bangladesh. Everyone blows up. Like, why are we not doing this? But that was a really tricky series. And whether you're protecting someone from that, I don't think that was the reason he wasn't picked. But now he goes in to test cricket as his first gig as a specialist batsman, even though he did bowl a few overs, against a weaker attack, and scores a double hundred. And I'm sure that now, every time he pulls on that New Zealand shirt, he's going to feel $1 million in whatever format he's playing. And he's 24. Yeah. And now we've got 10 years of his international career to look forward to. I just think this is a brilliant, brilliant, the way that it has gone, obviously, whether those 10 years will go how I want them to go or he wants them to go, who knows?
He's got the platform for that 10 years. And I think it has been management. I think you've played a blinder in the way that you've done that over the course of the last couple of years. And that World Cup as well in India, and now, you know, a home series where he's, you know, chock full of confidence. I'm really looking forward to him. You know, I don't want to skip ahead of the test match as Paulie's already done, but I'm really looking forward to that first test against Australia.
Can I just let some air out of your tyres? Just a little bit. Because I think you're right, but I disagree to a certain extent.
Sure.
Rachin Ravindra has been identified as a prodigious talent by New Zealand cricket for a long, long time. And in terms of the exposure that he's been given to the squads and the different formats, I completely agree. Where I disagree is that New Zealand have, for a time, used him in a role that he is not best suited. And that has led to criticism from people who are casual cricket fans going, hey, this guy batting at number seven's had no impact in ODIs. He's not a terrific player. As soon as New Zealand put him in a position where he was in his preferred role, i.e. top of the order in white ball cricket, top four in red ball cricket, and you know, opening in the World Cup in the white ball formats, that's when he super excelled. So I think the lesson from that is when you get a guy like this, you got to put him in this position where he is best suited rather than trying to give him exposure in the bowling all-rounder spot. Because I don't think he's best suited to that, right? It's better to have him in the side than not. I get it. But as soon as you give this guy responsibility, he pays you back in spades. And I think that's the lesson going forward.
Yeah. And that's changed a bit in the last 15 years, right? Because I think historically...
You bat at six.
And then if you're good enough, you might bat at three.
Yep. Or you bat at five and then at four and then et cetera. You're absolutely right.
But absolutely spot on. I think the top order or in the top order is where he needs to be. Because, again, I've probably not seen enough of his bowling, but he's going to be a batter who bowls a bit, I think, rather than a genuine.
I think your hope is that he's, you know,
in white ball
he becomes an all-rounder.
Yeah.
But I think there's a long way to go before you can play him as Ravi Jadeja, you know? He's a long way from that.
But he's somewhere between Kane and, you know, early Kane, when Kane did bowl, and Joe Root / maybe even a Jadeja type. Somewhere in there. But yeah, he's certainly a tremendous talent, as we all know.
Other positives from a New Zealand perspective? Nice to see Kyle Jameson back fit and on the field.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Kane. Well, let me run off some Kane stats soon. But Kyle Jameson, since you mentioned him, I think that's another sort of thing that New Zealand has kind of been able to tick off from this game. They've been able to go, okay, well, Kyle Jameson's coming back from an injury himself. He still at times doesn't look like he's running in at full speed with full confidence in his back. So, you know, maybe I'm interested to see now what they do in the second test in terms of workloads, and because part of me thinks he would really benefit from another test to be able to come and do this sort of stuff again. And but part of me thinks, well, you know, maybe they think, okay, well, he's played one test, let's now give him a bit of a rest and get him ready for this Australia series that I know everyone is so looking forward to. But I think that again, we talked a lot about kind of the progression of New Zealand's team and the way that we're going to have to build, because so many players are over 30. Moving Rutchin, obviously, we've got Rutchin in there now. We've got Phillips in there, who looks to be becoming an important part for balance reasons and for his skill reasons in all formats as well. Kyle Jameson is a linchpin really for what this next New Zealand bowling attack is going to look like once Southee is gone, once, you know, Matt Henry is gone. Although, you know, maybe there's still a couple of years for those guys. Kyle Jameson's the one that people are going to want to be the leader of this attack. So giving him the opportunity to sort of be in that position to do that, even though Southee's still there, Henry's still there, putting him in those positions, I think, is really valuable and nice to see him kind of get those rewards.
Absolutely. The thing I've liked from the New Zealand selection, other than the fact that they went with Rutchin, is they didn't hand too many caps out in this test series so far. We might see that change in the second test.
Yeah, Will O'Rourke, maybe.
With Daryl Mitchell now being out of the second test. And
I think it'll just be Will Young, but...
It could be, but they could elect to slide everyone up. You could see, you know, Blundell batting at six still. Phillips might bat at five. You might have, you know, Santner at seven, Jamison at eight, not a bad number eight, and then give Will O'Rourke a go. But I like that New Zealand have still respected the opposition enough to pick their best side and not handed out caps, you know, willy-nilly, as it were. I think it's really quite a good...
As you guys see, I mean, New Zealand's got a tough draw in this World Test Championship. Like, we've got Australia at home, we've got England at home. Those are two sides that always present challenges. We go to India, like we go to Sri Lanka. New Zealand needs to pick up these points. This is not yes, the rest of the world is looking on this as, with an asterisk, but New Zealand needs these points and they have to go out and deliver. And like we said before, they have to go out and tune up for this Australia series and go in with everyone chock full of confidence. And, you know, I think there are still some questions to be answered there because, you know, the Devin Conway's the big one. I was listening to a lot of the commentary on SENZ radio, fantastic, like that Ian Smith, Jeremy Coney, you know, John Bracewell, brilliant, brilliant team. I think, if, you know, anyone that can kind of line up that for the second test should do so. You know, basically their whole discussion around should New Zealand enforce the follow-on was Devin Conway needs some runs. Like, get Devin Conway another bat, because I think, you know, we've talked about it before, but I think he's up to nearly 20 innings now without a 50 since that 100 against England. Commentators are talking about it. You know, everyone, I'm sure it's in his head. He needs some runs because he's a, such a critical part to this New Zealand side. And if he's not there now, Daryl Mitchell's, you know, under an injury cloud. I didn't quite realise that his, you know, foot injury was bad enough that now it's, you know, been ongoing enough that they feel he needs a bit of time for an extended rest. So he's going to miss the second test and the T20s against Australia. But, you know, he's a pretty critical part, Conway. And if he's not going to, like, that's the one thing I want to see from this next test is Devin Conway getting runs.
At the risk of opening up a massive can of worms, we're already 47 minutes into this podcast and it's approaching, you know, it's not quite midnight, but it's pretty close. At the risk of opening up a long conversation, is Devin Conway better off not opening the batting for New Zealand in tests and batting in the middle order somewhere where he doesn't have to face a swinging new ball all the time?
Maybe. I mean, that's been the question all along, right? Everyone kind of thought that he was a middle order player, you know, that four was his natural position to kind of come in and fill in for Ross Taylor. And then he obviously got in his first test, the gap in the New Zealand side was at the top of the order. He comes in, scores a double hundred, and suddenly he's the opener going forward. It was the same with Tom Blundell. Tom Blundell had that opportunity at the top of the order. Mm. You know, sometimes you kind of just have to take where the gap is in the side, and he did so well at it, and he equipped himself so well that, you know, you looked at his next 10 tests or however many it's been and gone, why would we move him from opening? He's doing a great job. But yeah, maybe. But the thing is that then you end up with the same kind of discussion on,
is it Rutchin that goes
who,
up?
Who misses out?
Yeah.
Or does Rutchin have to go up? And then maybe it's more difficult for Rutchin to work his way into his test career when he's going up and facing, you know, Mitchell Stark and Pat Cummins and Josh Hazlewood with a new ball.
Here's a left field one for you. Daryl Mitchell at the top of the order.
I don't quite like that. I think Mitchell's been brilliant kind of whatever you ask Daryl Mitchell to do for New Zealand, he's been fantastic. But I think your ideal role for Daryl Mitchell is the Travis Head role, coming in at five, being able to turn a game. You know, that's what you want. And he's sort of changed his, well, not quite changed his approach, but he seems to have gone more and more towards the, I'm going to come in and be super positive, and I'm not going to let any bowlers dominate me. I'm not going to sit back and kind of get in a hole. I'm going to make sure that no matter what I do, I'm going to come out and advance the game along. And I think that's quite crucial for New Zealand when you think about some of the players that we do have at the top of the order, in the likes of Kane, the likes of Tom Latham, even the likes of Conway at times, who are prepared to bat for long periods.
Yeah.
And Kane, especially in that first innings, was a great example of that, when it looked like, you know, it looked like he was kind of fighting himself almost more than the bowling.
And the thing is, you've got your best seven batters there, down to Phillips and including Blundell, I think. So
yeah,
it's how you shuffle those, how you shuffle that deck, I think.
Yeah.
So Lippy, looking forward to the second test. Bordy talked a little bit about the permutations. Anything you'd like to see in that second game?
I don't know that there's anything I'd like to see. I am really interested to see what they do in terms of the selection, because yeah, I think the batting wise it'll be a straight swap. Will Young will come in, and actually that might be your opportunity to say, Will Young, okay, you open with Tom Latham, and we'll push Devin Conway down to four
or even five.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you'd want to do that if he's then going to go up and open against Australia.
Well, and a guy's just got 240 batting at four. Yeah, I think I'm not to lock that in for next week. Next week,
exactly. So, you know, but anyway, it gives the opportunity. Will Young batting at five is not really a like for like, because him and Daryl Mitchell are quite different players. But anyway, I think Will Young's the next cab off the rank. Mm-hmm. He'll probably come in there on the batting. But what they do on the bowling front is fascinating, because, you know, you've seen a side which, I think, you know, with Rutchin, with Phillips, with Santner playing this game, who I thought was really good.
Yeah, like, Verity's pace as well.
Yeah.
Seemed to have a bit of confidence. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, that's another thing that could be really huge for New Zealand. Like, if they can, I mean, there's a lot of negativity around Santner still for some reason at the test level. You know, I see a lot of comments about, oh, you know, I wish, why isn't AJ's playing here to Santner and all these kind of things. But I think the thing is that casual followers of the game probably haven't realised that since Mitchell Santner first started in Test cricket, his bowling has developed a huge amount, and particularly in the last 12 months. We talked about it during the World Cup. The way he's able to mix up his pace, his control's always been there, but the way he's managing his pace and his flight and getting more spin. Like now he is spinning the ball, whereas before he was, it was sort of slow spin, but he was able to, like, the, I mean, look, it's number 10 for South Africa, Moreki. He bowled him a ball that, you know, big spinner, out, you know, spun past the outside edge of the bat. Next ball, bowls a straight one, wrapped on the pads, gone. Like, that's perfect spin bowling, planning. And you can't do that if you can't turn the ball. You know, like, you have to have the skills to be able to set up batters like that. And when you look through that lineup with those three bowlers, it gives you so many options about what you're able to do. And even if they decide, we don't want to pick Santner, we don't need another specialist spinner, even just having Rutchin and Phillips who can come in and bowl some overs, means when you play your four seamers in New Zealand, you've kind of got your, you've got a, you've still got a balanced attack.
A bit of backup, yeah.
So, yeah. I think what the question is now going to be is the seamers, right? Because Neil Wagner missed out in this, on selection in this game. Everyone's kind of going now, gee, it'd be fun to see Will O'Rourke get a crack against this South African side, an opportunity. But how does that play out? Like, Neil Wagner was obviously next cab off the rank before.
I think you know what Neil Wagner can do, and you know whether or not he's in the plans for those test matches against Australia. You don't want a situation where, for example, Jameson goes down, you lose another seamer on the morning of the game, and Will O'Rourke's debuting against Australia. So for me, I think I'd go with the way of trying to have a look at him. But there is that balance that, you know, this is the World Test Championship and you've got a real opportunity to put the foot on the throat and, you know, win a game in 3 days and, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, go to Millbrook and play some golf.
I think it's, without trying to cheapen the cap, I think giving Will O'Rourke an opportunity in this test,
it is cheap.
It makes sense. It does make sense, particularly if you go, okay, we're going to rest Kyle Jamieson to keep him fresh for the Australia series. Those, you can see the line of thinking that makes sense there, and it's not cheapening the black cap to give Will O'Rourke a go just to have him, just to give him a go.
He deserves an opportunity in that squad,
and I think having him come in for Jamieson is a reasonable management decision to rest him given his injury history and keep him fresh for the Australia series and all the rest of it.
Well, I think the interesting question, one that they're going to have pretty soon when they go to, you know, some of these, to Sri Lanka or in India, is whether it's actually viable for Tim Southee to be the captain of this side. Because, you know, he's still an excellent bowler. He's still able to run and do what he's doing. But I think if everyone's fully fit, if you're only picking a couple of seamers in those conditions, I think Jameson and Henry are probably above him in terms of that pecking order. We've got Will O'Rourke coming in, who we hope is going to perform. And even in this test, right, for example, I think the one you'd want to rest or say, we don't, like, we know exactly what you do. We don't need you to, like, unless, you know, I mean, no, they all want to play. Like, that's the thing, you know, you guys are mentioning that about Neil Wagner. He'll be desperate to play, desperate to get out on the field. It's been a while since he's been back on the field for New Zealand. So none of those guys will want to sit out. But I think from a, you know, from a planning point of view, Southee's the one that you, I would think, we don't really, like, if we're going to rest someone, let's rest Southee and kind of keep Jameson, keep Henry, keep those guys going.
Sorry, to borrow a lead in from you. The Southee thing is different, though, in that his variation, like Santner's, is subtle. And I don't think casual fans appreciate the subtlety of his variation and how important he is to the New Zealand side.
He's really grown as a bowler, particularly away from home, Tim Southee. So,
oh, I don't disagree. Yeah,
I'm not going to put him quite in the same class as Jimmy, but
He's a guile bowler.
He's not as quick as he used to be, but he still does, you know, the old cliche of half a bat width, which is what you need to do to get good players out. Let's come on to whether Tim Southee can cling on to the Black Caps captaincy for a little while longer in a future podcast. Is there anything else we want to cover in the last 3 minutes?
Can I just rattle off some Kane stats? Because I mean...
Should we put it in the Patreon? Go on, carry on.
He is unbelievable. I mean, I guess the question, because look, I'll just rattle off some stats. He obviously got double, you know, 100 in both innings of this test, and we haven't even really talked about him. He really looked like he was struggling a bit in that first innings. It was hard work for him. Second innings comes out, paces the innings perfectly, did exactly what New Zealand needs to do. You know, he has now, that's his 31st 100th. He has the best ratio of tests, of innings to 100s for anyone over 30 100s, which is pretty spectacular. He's 13th all time, one behind Steve Waugh and Steve Smith. He has 100, I believe, in every calendar year of the past 12. He's only the fifth New Zealander now to score 100s in both innings of a test. Francis Paine had a really interesting stat that in the past 3 years, Kane's gone past 50 11 times. He scored 50 not out in the World Test Championship final. On the other 10 times, he's gone on to score 100s. So has never been dismissed in the last 3 years between 50 and 99. So basically, once he gets going, he goes on and makes it a really big score. He's the number one in the World Test rankings. But I still feel like people outside of New Zealand kind of don't think that that's appropriate. You know, people kind of pick on his record away from home, which I think is still not too bad, but you know, he still has his figures are lower and against some of those nations. But yeah, I just don't know who else actually would be a better test batter than him in the world at the moment. I don't think you can name anyone quite very easily.
1, 2, 3, Virat Kohli.
Well, but he had his, maybe he had his struggles for a long time as well, and I think that's what you don't see about Kane. I think his consistency has been absolutely remarkable. I mean, look, the next seven players on that list: Smith,
Root, we're still recording,
Daryl Mitchell, Babar Azam, Usman Khawaja, Virat Kohli, the next six behind Kane. I know who I would want to bat for my life. You know, it would be Kane all of those times.
I'd want my mum. Not a tremendous technique, but at least she'd care.
She'd care. She would care.
Sorry, that's a borrowed phrase from Dennis Committee. I must say that's not an original. It's not a baldy original.
Right. There is one more stat. He can be the first New Zealander to score 100 on a leap year. February the 29th. New Zealand, Australia.
Yes. Which might...
I've made that up, by the way, but it's... Basin Reserve. So we're looking forward to that.
Well, and the Hagley tests, which we are planning to be in attendance, might well be his 100th test. So that could be a wonderful occasion.
Right. Special.
Rice.
Be cool.
I think that's it.
We've done it. We've done it again.
Yep. So you've been tuning into the Kane Williamson Fan Club podcast for the last 3 or 4 minutes. Look, it is fantastic to be seeing Red Bull cricket dominate the airwaves over the course of the last little while. We'll be looking forward, of course, to that next Black Caps test match, and then in around about a week's time we'll be back on the airwaves to talk about England continuing a series in India at Raj Cup. But for now, it is good night and god bless from us all here on the Top Order Podcast in Auckland. We'll see you soon. Good night.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.